You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
Well, we finished up, John. We got two more weeks till we start our Revelation series, the book of Revelation, end times, apocalyptic. Very cool. So what we're going to do is this week and next week probably, we're going to do a couple more stories from the life of Jesus that aren't found in the book of John. Tonight, we're going to look at one of my favorite stories, one of my favorite parables, one of the most beloved parables, stories that Jesus ever told, the story of the prodigal son. And so we're going to look at, we're going to see God's love, hopefully, in a new way. Yes, the parable of the prodigal son. It actually is part of a three-pack of stories that Jesus told. It doesn't stand alone. Three stories that all have a lot of parallelism to them. And as we look at this story tonight, what we might see is we learn something about God that might change our lives forever, that might forever change the way we view God as we understand the way that God views us. Let's just go ahead and read. Luke chapter 15, it says, "Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear Jesus. But the Pharisees and teachers of the law muttered, 'This man welcomes sinners and eats with them.'" All right, well, we've seen both of these characters before. We've got the tax collectors, the sinners. This was like the riffraff, the lowest of the low in society. Everybody hated these guys, not just because they were taking their money and giving it to Rome, but just because they were traitors to the Jewish people and they were cooperating with the Roman government. The Pharisees and teachers of the law, these were the religious elite. And Jesus has clashed with these guys a number of times in all the different books of the Gospels. And so, you know, this scene here, you can just kind of imagine the scene. On the one hand, you've got Jesus over here. He is with these people that the rabbis, the religious leaders, would never talk to. And he's telling them about God. He's happy. He's laughing with them. He's eating with them. And then over in this other corner here, you have the Pharisees, the teachers of the law, grumbling. Oh, this man, he welcomes sinners and eats with them. Grumble, grumble, grumble. It's just this, like, two very different pictures. And you wonder in this whole thing, what does God think about what Jesus is doing, hanging out with these sinful people? You know, these are the people that, you know, you talk to some people and they're like, "Man, I couldn't go into church. Lightning would strike me. Ha, ha, ha." You know, these were those kind of people. They were just like, "I would never, ever check out God." And yet this Jesus guy was showing them the love of God in such a way that they had never seen before. And you just wonder, what does God think? Well, Jesus, he's gonna tell a couple of stories that are gonna show us what God thinks. They're gonna show us God's heart in this whole situation. You know, with these two camps, how does God feel? Well, Jesus told him this story. Story number one is called The Lost Sheep. If a man has 100 sheep, and one of them gets lost, what will he do? That would be like a typical size flock for a shepherd in this day. He's got 100 sheep, one of them wanders away. What's he gonna do? Won't he leave the 99 others in the wilderness and go to search for the one that is lost until he finds it? Okay, this seems like a little bit like overkill. I mean, he's got 99 sheep. Still, he's lost one. Doesn't seem like that big of a deal. And yet to the shepherd who loves that sheep, who cares for that sheep, who watches over that sheep, it actually is a big deal. And so what he's gonna do is he's gonna leave the 99 with the other shepherds and he's gonna go off and he's gonna find this one sheep. And when he's found it, he will joyfully carry it home on his shoulders. He's just so happy. And when he arrives, he will call together his friends and his neighbors. "Rejoice with me because I found my lost sheep." And again, does this seem like an overreaction to you? Again, not to him, not to him. He's so happy that this sheep is now found. It was lost. He's found it at great cost to himself. Of course, this isn't just a story about sheep. Jesus says, "In the same way, there is more joy in heaven over one lost sinner who repents and returns to God than over 99 others who are quote unquote righteous and haven't strayed away." See, just the happiness that you see on the face of this shepherd, he says, that's nothing compared to the happiness on the face of God when one person turns back to him. You know, we might think, you know, God is pretty happy with these 99 so-called righteous, but God, you know, people who think they're righteous, who think that, you know, they haven't strayed away, God says, give me one who realizes they're off track and turns back to me. And I am so happy. And the shepherd has gone out to get them, just like Jesus left heaven to come down to earth to die on the cross for those lost sheep. He loves those lost sheep. And there's rejoicing. You know, the Pharisees had a saying, there is joy before God when those who provoke him perish from the world. And Jesus says, no, actually you're wrong. There's actually joy before God when those who hate him turn back to him. And when they come back to God. He says, let me tell you another story about a lost coin. Suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. That's about a day's wage, you know, $100. She misplaces a $100 bill. She's poor. That's all she's got. Won't she light a lamp and sweep the entire house and search carefully until she finds it? And when she finds it, she'll call in her friends and neighbors and say, rejoice with me because I have found my lost coin. Again, if I called a party every time I found something that I lost, my neighbors would be getting pretty tired of me. My wife laughs over there. And yet, that's not the case here. Rejoice with me because I found my lost coin. And Jesus said, this isn't just a parable about coins either. In the same way, there is joy in the presence of God's angels when even one sinner repents. And so again, he's showing them. Remember the Pharisees sitting there grumbling about Jesus eating with sinners? Jesus says, let me tell you how God feels about this right now. Everybody is partying. And so there's a pattern here in these first two stories that will be followed in the third story as well. Something valuable gets lost. There's an owner, a finder, who searches everywhere for the thing that was lost, high and low. The finder finally finds what was lost. And then they call out, rejoice with me, and throw a huge party for everybody they know, friends, family, neighbors. And this brings us to our third story, the story of the lost son. Lost sheep, lost coin, lost son. This one's longer. A lot more character development in this one. To illustrate the point further, Jesus told them this story. A man had two sons. And the younger son one day told his father, I want my share of the estate now, before you die. All right, this would be a little shocking even today. Even more shocking back in that culture. I mean, this would be, a lot of people say this is the equivalent of him saying, Dad, you're dead to me. Give me my money. I'm out of here. Imagine saying that to one of your parents. Offensive and shocking for a son to treat his father in this way. But you know what's even more shocking? The father agreed to divide the wealth between his sons. You know, right away, we're just like, what kind of father is this that just lets his son push him around? Does he have no respect for himself? Well, I would never let my kid treat me that way, is what his audience is thinking. There's something wrong in this family that the father would just give to the son in this way, just let him go his own way with all of the stuff. Younger son would have gotten a third of the estate. Older son got a double portion, two-thirds. Well, a few days later, this younger son packed all of his belongings. This word packed all of his belongings is literally converted it to cash. Imagine this scene. How awkward and horrifying this would be. The younger son is taking everything they own, all these precious family heirlooms, and he's having a garage sale. Guy walks up, how much for this ancient family heirloom, your grandmother's vase? $20. Okay. And, you know, I'll throw in her wedding ring for another 30. I got to get out of town. And the guy's like, yeah, I'll do it. Just liquidating asset after asset. The family's just standing there watching this garage sale, watching all these precious possessions liquidated, converted to cash. There was no U-Hauls, no moving vans, no storage units back then. This guy needed cash and he wanted to get out of there. He's packing up what little he has left as, again, the family awkwardly stands by. This father standing there, letting this son go his own way. And then the son moved to a distant land, and there he wasted all his money in wild living. So his destination, the distant land. Why the distant land? Wasn't there plenty of wild living here, locally? Yeah, there was, probably. But it's not just about the wild living. There was something in this son that wanted to get away from the father. The distant land. And you know, what did the wild living entail? Well, it doesn't say, but I'm sure you can imagine. Probably similar to some of the wild living we might see today. We probably have better options, but there's probably women involved, maybe some prostitutes, almost certainly some prostitutes. Some substance abuse, maybe some other possessions, purchases, living the high life. And in this distant land, one thing that he knew is he was far away from the Father. And what Scripture tells us is that there's something in us, too, that knows that God the Father is there. And there's something in us that wants to get away from that, that wants to get away to a distant land, wants to get away from the Father. Of course, we can never escape from his presence because he's everywhere. But some of us, maybe we can relate to this younger son. Maybe there was a part of us that wanted to get away. Maybe part of us have gone to the distant land. We've lived up some wild living. Maybe we're living it out right now. Trying to get away from dad. Yeah. And we might try to do this too. We might try to do this too. But like him, we may find ourselves running into a couple of problems. First of all, he wasted all his money. And the time came when he had spent everything. Second of all, a great famine swept over the land, and he began to be in need. Spent everything, and wouldn't you know it, as it so often happens, disaster strikes. And you know, this is not just a parable about money and about a son and his foolish use of his inheritance. This great famine, this might hit in our lives as well. Where we're living it up, we feel like, okay, this is the good life, right? And then something happens. We get sick. We get hurt. Medical bills start to pile up. We're unable to work. Maybe there's a car accident. Maybe we get fired. Maybe we get taken advantage of by a friend. Maybe a relationship, a romantic relationship just falls apart on us. And we get messed over so bad and it hurts so much. Maybe an investment fails. We get caught or arrested or evicted. And we have no money, and nobody wants anything to do with us anymore. We can't buy our way out of this anymore because our resources have run out, and we've spent our money, and we've spent right out of our own very soul. I can relate to this. Can you? Where you just feel like, I am really hitting rock bottom. He began to be in need, Jesus says. Yeah, the need. And this need can eat away at you. You can find yourself thinking things you never would have thought. You can find yourself doing things you never would have done before. Your standards are lowering. This can be pretty shocking. In fact, things got so bad, he persuaded a local farmer to hire him. And the man sent him into his fields to feed the pigs. Feeding the pigs. Didn't get any lower than this. For a first century Jew, where pigs were the filthiest animals, and you're sitting there, and the pigs are eating better than I am. It's hard to imagine how bad this would have been. Imagine a job where you're like the porta potty cleaner guy. And you're cleaning that out, and you see a little like fast food bag sitting there in the outhouse. And you're like, huh, I wonder if there's any fries left in there. You're so hungry, you're so desperate, that the fast food bag and the porta potty sounds kind of good. Or what about armpit sniffers? Professional armpit sniffers. And you're like, boy, that gel deodorant looks kind of good. I wonder what it tastes like. This is where the man was at. This is how far he had fallen. He was the son of a great estate owner. And now he's feeding pigs, hitting rock bottom. In fact, he became so hungry that even the pods that he was feeding the pigs looked good to him. When you get desperate, when you hit rock bottom, things that before looked so gross, they start to look kind of good. And you're like, I can't believe I'm even considering this. I can't believe where my life has fallen to. But no one even gave him anything. They're like, no, that's for the pigs. You can't have that. The pigs are above you in our opinion. You work. He was a hired hand, a day laborer, and you can't have any of the pig food. And then something amazing happens. It says that this young man finally came to his senses. And this will happen sometimes. You know, some people, they will labor on at the pig farm. They will labor on in this state of desperate need for months or even years. And some people, for the rest of their lives, they will not come to their senses. They will not break. Is that you? Is that you? Are you in this spot where you're kind of teetering on the edge? And am I going to keep doing this? Am I going to keep going in this direction? It says, for this young man, there came a point when he finally came to his senses. And this slow deterioration has finally reached a point of crisis. Are some of you, I ask, reaching this point? Are some of you wondering, where is my life headed? What is my life about? And how did I sink to this place? How am I considering that thing that I'm considering? How did I do the thing that I just did? Perhaps as recently as last night, earlier today. Are you ready to come to your senses? This man said to himself, you know, at home, even the hired servants have enough food to spare. And here I am dying of hunger. He's not talking about, there was a certain type of servant that was more like part of the family. They were hired on. They were there all the time. They had security. They're almost treated like, you know, part of the family, right? He's not talking about them. He's talking about the day laborers, where each morning you would show up in the town square and you hoped somebody would hire you. And each day when his dad had work, he'd go out and he'd bring these guys in and they would work for the day and he'd pay them out and they'd go and there's no commitment. It's like a temp job. And he's like, even those guys, the lowest of the lowest servants with no security, even those guys, they had it better off than me. They weren't sitting around feeding pigs and wishing they could eat some of the slop. And so he says, I will go home to my father. I will go home to my father. Yes, that is where I will turn. He gets so desperate that he finally comes to his senses and breaks and says, even though I told the old man I wish he was dead and gave him the finger in front of the entire town and liquidated everything that I inherited, I'm gonna go back to him, yes. And I'm gonna say, Father, I have sinned against both heaven and you, and I am no longer worthy of being called your son. I'm not a son anymore. Please take me on as a hired servant. It's interesting that he's still calling him father. There's a part of him that knows he's a son. And he's, I'm just going to see if I can get a day job with dad. That's what I'm going to do. What was running through the son's mind as he begins the long journey from the distant land back to the father's home? What's going through his mind? Is he thinking to himself, okay, I've sinned against heaven in your sight. These are hurt, and I'm no longer worthy of being called your son. Here's what I'm going to say, and you know, I'm just going to keep pushing right on through, no matter how he objects or how he looks at me. I just need to get a hearing with the Father. Is he wondering, will he even recognize me? you know, here he's in tattered clothes, emaciated, covered in filth. He's changed, and not for the better. There's somebody where you haven't seen him in a little while, and you're like, whoa, you do not look good. That's what it would have been like with this guy. He's had some hard living. He's been working on the pig farm, okay? That's hard duty. Will Dad even recognize me? Will he even know that I'm his son? He's replaying probably regret after regret. He's thinking about how awful he was to the father, about the stuff, maybe thinking back to the time when he sold all of the stuff, packing up the stuff, his final awkward, tense interactions with the family. He's thinking about the people who messed him over, the people who he used in the distant country. He's thinking about foolish decisions he made with his money, about people who he should never have trusted. So many regrets. So many regrets. He's got to be wondering, how will the father respond? Will he just sit there with his arms folded and give me the silent patriarch treatment, just shaking his head and turning around and walking away and just leaving me there on the doorstep? How will the people in my town respond as I begin walking down the street and they see me again? This would have been quite the scandal. The gossip mills would have been churning here. So he returned home to his father. And what does he find? While he was still a long way off, the father, he sees, my son is coming. And then filled with love and compassion, he ran to his son, embraced him, and kissed him. You didn't run as a dignified patriarch with long flowing robes. He's probably pulling his robe up a little bit just so he can run to the son. And he throws his arms around him and he kisses his son. And you can just see the love and the compassion on his face for the son who hated him and who took his stuff and left and made so many foolish choices. And the son kind of pushes the father away and says, Father, I have something to say to you. I have sinned against both heaven and you, and I am no longer worthy of being called your son, and I want... Doesn't even let him finish the part about the hired hand. The father interrupts the son. He begins barking orders to the servants. Quick, get the finest robe. Put it on him. Get a ring for his finger and sandals for his feet. And kill that calf we've been fattening. Let us celebrate with a feast. For this son of mine was dead and now has returned to life. He was lost, but now he is found. And the party begins. The party begins. And you know, Jesus, he tells this story because he wants you to understand how God feels about you. And I pray that you can see the love of the Father as he gazes upon you. We wonder, how is God going to respond if I turn to him now after what I've done? And we see exactly what the Father is going to do. He's going to be standing there watching for you when you come staggering back in your pitiful state. And he's going to run out to meet you, and he's going to wrap his arms around you, and he's going to shower you with kisses. And then he's going to interrupt your silly little speech about how you're not going to be a son anymore. And he's going to put the finest robe on you. And he is going to put a ring on your finger and sandals on your feet. And he is going to go around with joy, declaring to everyone, my son, my daughter was lost, and now you have been found. Don't you want to be right there? Don't you want to be in that spot? And Jesus says, the good news is, it doesn't matter how far you are from God. If you turn back to him, there is joy. There is joy all over the face of the Father. And he is happy that you have turned back. And that's when the real party begins. You see, we think the party is getting away from God. We think the party is the wild living in the distant country. But if you've done that, you might know there's some cheap thrills, but it gets old real quick. And it begins to take its toll on your soul. And we've got so many problems, physical problems, mental health problems, unhappiness problems, because we're not living the way the Father wants us to live. And because we've severed the tie with him. The real party, the real happiness is with God. And I look at my life and I cannot believe how happy I am following God. There are times where I am brought to the point of tears because I can't believe the life God has given me, the relationships he's given me, the friends that he's given me, the family that he's given me, the happiness and the peace from God. It's hard to describe. And that is the warm scene here in this home where the son has now returned. Of course, the son needed to go home to the father first, though. He had to turn to the father. And that's what you've got to do. You need to do what the son did, which is turn to God, turn to the father. And just receive what you don't deserve. Not only does he give you mercy where he doesn't give you what you do deserve, he gives you grace where you get what you don't deserve. And you're treated like royalty is how God treats his kids because he's a king. Repentance is what this is called, what this son did. A change of mind, a change of heart, a turning back. Repentance. You can see he went home to the Father. Some of us, we just feel sorry for ourselves and we just keep rolling around in the pigs. We keep living out there on the pig farm. The pig farm is not your destiny. You were created for so much more than that. Turn to the Father. He's waiting there with a safe home, with open arms, with love and compassion. He wants you to come home. Come home. Come home. He also took full responsibility. Some people get in this situation like, well, where was God when I was on the pig farm? Where was God when all these people messed me over and when the money ran out? And what about that famine? If God's so good, all right, stop blaming other people for the place your life is. Yes, I'm sure other people contributed. But if he was home with the Father, he could have handled anything life threw at him. You've got to take responsibility and stop blaming others. Sometimes God allows these tragedies to strike because he wants us to turn to him. And pain is often God's megaphone to get our attention. You've got to take responsibility. Don't blame other people. Don't blame God. Just come home. Receive grace. And so the story ends the same way as the first two, right? Remember our pattern? You had something gets lost. You've got a finder who searches for that thing. You know, he didn't go out for him, but he was standing there looking for him. He gave him the money. The lost thing gets found, and the finder is so happy. Is rejoicing, is throwing a party. You must rejoice with me because my lost thing got found. In this case, my lost one got found. And we expect the story to end there. Three stories, nice little happy ending. But before we roll the credits, the movie's not over. There's a hidden scene at the end. And this is actually the central scene. Meanwhile, the older son was out in the fields, working. Remember, this is not the parable of the prodigal son. Jesus' opening line was, a man had two sons. Two sons. And this older son, he has no idea any of this stuff is going on. He's just out there, work, work, working. He's such a hard worker, that older son. He's completely missing out on the party. Completely missing out on this joyful reunion, but But he's working. He's working hard. And he returns home, and what does he hear? What's going on here? I'm out working, and do I hear music? Do I hear dancing? It says that he heard dancing. It must have been a serious party. He's close enough to hear the music and the dancing, but for some reason, he's not going into that party. He grabs a servant. What's going on here? What's the party about? Your brother's back, he was told. Your father, he killed the fattened calf. We're having a party, a feast. We're celebrating because of his safe return. Isn't that exciting? So he's got like a 12 pack. He's heading back in. But the older brother was angry. And he wouldn't go in. The party's right over there. He's just standing out there with the party going on. The older brother's angry, but everyone else is rejoicing. He's the only one in the whole chapter who's not rejoicing. You know, the shepherd loses the sheep, finds it. Party. Everybody's partying. The woman loses the coin, finds it. Party. Everybody's partying. You got to rejoice. The father finds the son. Party. Everybody's partying. Everyone in the chapter. Well, I guess there was one group that wasn't partying, right? You remember verse 2? The Pharisees grumbling. Jesus is over here partying with the sinners and the Pharisees. This man eats with sinners. What disrespect to the Father by not going in. Their heart is so far from the heart of the Father. They won't go to the party. It's right over there. And so how does the Father respond? His father came out and pleaded with him. Party would have stopped. When the host leaves, the music shuts off, the dancers kind of slowly stop dancing as they realize there's nothing to dance to. You can imagine this scene. The father walks out to the older son. The people are at the party. They come over to the door and they all look out the door at this scene between the father and the older son. They're like, he won't come into the party? What kind of son is this? And so you have the shepherd who already went out and got one lost sheep, goes out now to get the other lost sheep. This would have been shocking. Maybe not quite as shocking as the younger son saying, I wish you were dead, give me all my money, and then doing a garage sale for the family heirlooms. But it was pretty bad. And look at how the older son replies to the father. Look. Not father, not sir. Look, all these years I've slaved for you and never once refused to do a single one of your commandments. He slaved. Yeah, that's how he saw it. Commandments. All that time, you never gave me even one young goat for a feast with my friends. Look at how much I've worked and I've slaved and I've followed your commandments. And here you give him a 4-course meal. All I wanted, Dad, was a Big Mac. and maybe like a birthday party at McDonald's with my respectable friends, unlike this guy. All those commandments. Well, not all the commandments, I mean. Didn't he say in verse 23, let us celebrate because my son has come back? Didn't obey that commandment. His heart is so far from the heart of the Father. He thinks he's so good. He thinks he's doing what the Father wants. He's not. He couldn't be any farther from the heart of the Father. Never even calls him dad in this whole thing. And now, this son of yours, he doesn't call him brother of mine, this son of yours comes back after squandering your money on prostitutes, and you celebrate by killing the fattened calf. Pitiful, pitiful. You see the anger, you see his comparisons with the younger son. You see the call for justice, and you just can't help but wonder, what were the Pharisees thinking at this part in the story? They got to realize that's us. The sinners have got to realize that younger son, that's us. That's exciting. All their lives reviewing the commandments they've kept, comparing themselves to the younger son, and the whole time they were not at the party either. The whole time they were far from the heart of the Father, and the Father actually had a problem with them. And they apparently have a problem with the Father. And how does the Father respond? You'd expect a beat down, perhaps? Nope. With love and compassion and pleading with the older son to change his mind. Son, you've always stayed by me. Everything I have is yours. Remember, it's all yours now. We had to celebrate this happy day, for your brother was dead and has come back to life. He was lost, but now he is found. We wonder, why didn't he ever get a baby goat? Why didn't he ever get a Big Mac? It was all his. He never asked. He never received. It was there for the taking. You just had to ask, the Father says. You're so busy working, you forgot to ask for a freebie. He says celebration is not optional. Celebration is not optional. And the big question now is, how is the older brother going to respond? We've reached the high point of the story. He's asked a question. It's hanging out there. What's the older brother going to do? And the answer is, we don't know. We never find out. The story ends there. And frankly, it doesn't matter because the older brother is a fictional character. He ceases to exist at this point in the narrative. But the question on everybody else's mind is, Pharisees, how are you going to respond? This man eats with sinners. How are you going to respond? The question for some of us here tonight, we've worked so hard and we've slaved away and we thought it was for God, followed all these commandments. How are you going to respond? They were operating on the basis of works and the Father was operating on the basis of grace. Would they come around? Will you come around on that? That's the big question for some of us here tonight. How will you respond? That's the question. Do you need to learn from the older son? I think some of us might. Do you need to realize you're just as lost as the younger son? Maybe I haven't done the bad things that they've done, but I'm just as much in need of the grace of God. He wants to invite, he wants you to come to the party too. He doesn't want you slaving away far from the Father. He wants you right there close to him. He wants you to have the same heart that he does. Stop slaving and instead get to know the Father. Lay down your religious works. Receive grace, relationship, the love of God. Let that fill your heart. And then ask your Father to give you his love for the lost. Ask God, give me love for people that don't know you, people that are far from you. I want to be like Jesus. I want to show love to people like that. And that love comes when you realize how much you've been loved by God, even though you didn't deserve it. The other question is, do you need to learn from the younger son? Some of you, you're living in the distant land. You're spending yourself. You're desperate. You're settling for so much less than God created you for. You're a noble being made in the image of God. You shouldn't be feeding pigs and longing for the slop. You should not be lowering your standards. You need God to come in and show you who you really are and how much value you really have, how much he loves you. He loves you so much, he sent his son to die for you. You're settling. You're wondering what God thinks about you. Well, you can read right here what the Father thinks and how he'll respond when you turn back. Look at the Father right here in this story. Look at the Father. Come home to him. Doesn't matter what you've done. Doesn't do any good to dwell on that. The best time to turn around is today. And that's the story of the prodigal son. You can see why that's one of the most famous stories Jesus ever told. Wow, Lord, what a powerful story here. Really grateful that Jesus told this story. I'm grateful you preserved it for us, Lord. It's embarrassing how much of myself I see in both of these sons and how little of the Father's heart I see in my own. But I'm thankful that you continually go out and find me when I'm in the distant land. And you've done that at really pivotal moments in my life. And you've also gone out and got me as the self-righteous field dweller, worker. And you're just there. You're persistent. Your love, your compassion, trying to show me how much you love me. Thank you for how you demonstrated your love, that while we were your enemies, Christ died for us. Lord, there's got to be people in this room that don't know that love in a personal way. I pray that tonight would be the night they feel that embrace, the embrace of the Father and the royal treatment, Lord. Amen.